Hello, and welcome to the Women's Hour. My name is Kelly Pyle, and I am your Sun Sounds of Arizona volunteer broadcaster. Today's show features articles from the July 27th issue of People magazine, as well as the July and August edition of Women's Health magazine. A few of the articles that I will share with you today include Harry's Rocky Road to Reunion, Why I'm Cautiously Optimistic About the Renewed Women's Health Strategy, and Can You Turn Back the Clock? Harry's Rocky Road to Reunion. What began as Prince Harry's long-awaited return to the UK with Meghan, Archie, and Lilibet became an emotional week of palace drama, legal heartbreak, and family rifts still waiting to be mended by Simon Perry and Erin Hill. This is from People magazine. After one of the most emotionally turbulent weeks Prince Harry has experienced since leaving royal life, he finally got the moment that once seemed impossible, a reunion with his father, King Charles, alongside his stepmom, Queen Camilla, his wife, Meghan, Duchess of Sussex, and their children, Prince Archie, 7, and Princess Lilibet, 5. When they gathered at Highgrove House in the English countryside on July 10th, it was the first time Charles, 77, had seen his California-based grandchildren in 4 years. For Harry, 41, it marked the fulfillment of a long-held hope, bringing his kids closer to their grandfather. One of the strangenesses of monarchy is that we are all encouraged to forget they're human beings because they're representative of the institution, royal author Catherine Meyer says. But at its heart, it's just a family, and this family has gone through extraordinary upheavals. Whatever you think of the monarchy, this is a moment most of us wanted to see happen. Getting there, however, proved anything but simple. Security concerns cast doubt over whether Meghan, 44, and their children would even be able to return to Britain, threatening both the family reunion and an itinerary brimming with highly publicized engagements. What followed was a week marked by familiar themes of mistrust, recriminations, and blame, as Harry again found himself at odds with the institution he and Meghan left behind in 2020. A public disagreement with Buckingham Palace over accommodations was followed by a bruising legal defeat, all against the backdrop of the unresolved rift with Harry's brother, Prince William, 44. There were U-turns and backtracks, and it will have all added to the complete exasperation of the king and his aides when dealing with Harry, says Russell Myers, author of William and Catherine. That wasn't how the visit was supposed to unfold. When Harry's team announced the trip in late June, Meghan and the children were expected to join him throughout the week as he marked the one-year countdown to the 2027 Paralympic-style Invictus Games in Birmingham, England. Instead, in an uncomfortable about-face, Harry announced on July 4th he would travel to London alone after learning that he and his family would not receive police protection throughout the visit. The uncertainty then further spilled into public view when Harry's team and Buckingham Palace offered sharply different accounts of accommodation arrangements. After initially declining the offer to stay at a royal residence, Harry later sought to accept it, but palace officials maintained the deadline has passed, turning what should have been a private family matter into yet another public scuffle. Behind the scenes, the drama surrounding the visit was quite stressful, says a source close to the Sussexes. Adds Myers, what was billed as a big homecoming, not only for Harry, but potentially for Meghan too, turned into a nightmare. It was further evidence of the fractiousness of Harry's relationship with the institution. For those close to Harry, the public wrangling was as frustrating as it was familiar. This is not the first time it has not been plain sailing with correspondence or trying to make things work, says a well-placed source. It all comes back to security. If that was resolved, there would be so much more certainty every time he comes or they come. For Meghan, who had expected to spend the week alongside Harry, the turmoil was especially painful. A source who knows the couple says she would have felt humiliated watching the headlines. But another insider adds, when it comes to Harry's dealings with his family, she always lets him take the lead. If the public back and forth over security and accommodation cast a shadow over Harry's return, an even more personal blow awaited. On July 7th, Harry learned he had lost his years-long $67 million privacy case against Associated Newspapers, publisher of the Daily Mail. The Duke and six fellow claimants, including Elizabeth Hurley and Elton John, saw their claims dismissed in their entirety. The court case was a massive defeat for Harry, says royal author Simon Vigar. But just minutes after the devastating news came down, Harry had a job to do. As reporters' phones buzzed with alerts announcing the verdict shortly after 2 p.m., Harry walked onto the stage for an Invictus Games conference, greeting the audience with a joke about the venue being one of the few rooms in the UK that has air conditioning amid the sweltering London heatwave. Though he would later denounce the ruling as a complete and obvious whitewash, Harry kept his attention fixed on the veterans and military leaders gathered before him. At one point, he observed that what brings us together is far more important than what sets us apart. His ability to keep calm and carry on astounded many in the crowd. Says the well-placed source, he can compartmentalize. He was there to support the people at the Invictus Games. As the week continued, Harry threw himself into the work that has long grounded him. At Birmingham Children's Hospital on July 9th, he celebrated the 20th anniversary of the Well Child Nurses, who care for children with complex medical needs. He hugged staff and chatted with families and patients, revealing that Archie is currently obsessed with Lego. He has a wonderful way with everybody, Well Child nurse Nikki Holt says. Moments like that really show how personable he is. The following day, at an event Meghan had originally been expected to attend alongside him, Harry arrived in Birmingham for the countdown to the 2027 Invictus Games, the adaptive sporting competition he founded for wounded, injured, and sick service personnel and veterans. Invictus is Harry on his A game. It was, look at what you're missing, adds Vigar, author of the upcoming Four Wives of Windsor. It's a crying shame. Meghan and Harry could have been absolutely transformative for the royal family. While Henry devoted himself to the public mission that had brought him to Britain, The private reunion he had hoped for was quietly falling into place. After days of uncertainty, Megan, Archie, and Lilibet traveled to Britain from Portugal, where the family had been vacationing. Hours after wrapping up his Birmingham event on July 10th, Harry and his family made the journey to Highgrove House in Gloucester. For the first time since 2022, Archie and Lilibet saw the grandfather they barely knew. The gathering also marked only the third meeting between Harry and Charles since the King's 2024 cancer diagnosis. Queen Camilla, 78, was present as well, Buckingham Palace confirmed. She is a non-negotiable part of Charles' life, says Meyer, author of Divide and Rule. There is no reconciliation with him without her. The palace asserted that there would be no photos released and no details of what was discussed. It is better that people don't know anything about these meetings, says a source close to the family. They should be allowed to rekindle those family ties. That the reunion took place at Highgrove carried its own symbolism. It is the family home where William and Harry spent much of their childhood. Highgrove doesn't have the pomp and circumstance or institutional aspects of a palace, adds Meyer. It reveals this as a family matter, a human matter. In Spare, Harry described Highgrove as a place of peace. Now it was Archie and Lilibet discovering it for themselves. If the reunion at Highgrove offered hope for one relationship, another remained as fractured as ever. While Harry reunited privately with his father in Gloucestershire, his brother William spent the day at his annual charity polo match in Windsor, joined by Princess Kate, 44, who made a rare appearance after missing the event the previous 2 years amid her fight against cancer. The brothers were once again in the same country, but there was never any serious notion they would meet. The rift that widened after the Sussexes stepped back from royal duties in 2020 and deepened following Harry's memoir shows no signs of healing. It's so broken, an insider says. Adds a source who knows both brothers. I thought it would have perhaps eased a little bit by now, to be honest, but there has been no movement, especially on William's side. There is no contact. The distance now reaches the next generation. Prince George, 13, Princess Charlotte, 11, and Prince Louis, 8, have no relationship with Archie and Lilibet, despite being first cousins. Diana would be devastated that it has turned out like this, particularly because the brothers were once so close, says Vigar. Harry's final engagement of the trip offered a poignant counterpoint. Visiting bereaved military children at Scotty's Little Soldiers on July 11th, he spoke candidly about navigating life's hardest moments. Grief and loss can feel incredibly isolating and very, very lonely, he told the children. But you guys are not alone in this. Please reach out to each other. When 9-year-old Poppy, whose father died in 2020, asked him what makes him laugh after a difficult day, Harry paused. Sometimes it's just a difficult day, he admitted. It's not always possible to laugh. Then came the answer that reflected where his thoughts so often returned. My children make me laugh. Harry's reflections on grief carried a deeply personal resonance. During the family's visit, they stayed at Althorpe, the Spencer family's 13,000-acre ancestral estate where Diana grew up and is buried. hosted by Harry's Uncle Charles Spencer, Archie and Lilibet had the chance to learn more about their grandmother, who died when Harry was 12. Taken together, the visits to Highgrove and Althorpe reflected Harry's broader hope for the trip, reconnecting with the family history that shaped him. Whether the reunion with his father marks a lasting turning point remains to be seen. Those close to Harry hope the progress with Charles continues, not only privately but publicly. Looking ahead to the 2027 Invictus Games in Birmingham next summer, sources say, Harry would welcome his father's support in his role as head of the armed forces, a powerful sign that the thaw between them is continuing. But if the past week underscored anything, it was the balancing act Harry still lives every day. In Montecito, he has built the life he fought for, with Meghan, Archie, and Lilibet at its center. In Britain remain the memories, unresolved rifts, and royal heritage that continue to define him. He's never lived a life here where he hasn't been entangled in his past life, says an insider who knows Harry in California. He's always had one foot there. For Harry, the challenge has never been choosing between those two worlds, but ensuring his family has a place in both. With reporting by Monique Jensen, this is from People Magazine, Harry's Rocky Road to Reunion. I'm cautiously optimistic about the government's women's health strategy. While its big plans to transform reproductive health were launched with fanfare, those on the front line reflect on the renewed strategy with a realist lens. This is from Women's Health. This July marks 4 years since the last government launched its initial and pretty vague women's health strategy. Its renewal in April of this year by the new administration felt hopeful for many, especially its promises to reduce the gender health gap by tackling medical misogyny and the gaslighting of women. For far too long, reproductive health allocated a mere 2% of medical research funding has been neglected. As a community sexual and reproductive health consultant and PhD researcher, I'm frequently told by patients that they feel ignored and are distressed by long gynecological waiting times. Although it's tempting to celebrate medical misogyny being a focus, I worry about the practicalities. The previous women's health strategy focused on the establishment of women's health hubs, but it was detail light. The renewed strategy appears far more comprehensive, with a large-scale consultation and more than 100,000 submissions. It appears civil servants did their homework. The government proposes improving care in 3 ways: by shifting it back into the community, and through digital provision and increased prevention. I'm a fan of community-based care, as it enables providers like me to tailor our services to the needs of our patient cohort, because we know one model won't fit everyone across the country. The first point of contact for many women is their GP, who's only afforded 10 minutes with them. That includes a physical examination if needed. It means for those with gynecological issues, consultation time is stretched. The strategy mentions improving consistency between GPs, yet time constraints remain an issue. and many GPs aren't remunerated properly when providing gynecologic procedures, such as fitting intrauterine devices, IUDs. Menstrual disorders and menopause are among the priorities for the new NHS online hospital when it launches next year. I've lost count of the number of women who've been denied hormone replacement therapy, HRT, while struggling with debilitating symptoms. It's promising, then, that the government has pledged 1.5 million euros to femtech developers over the next 2 years. But the NHS must improve its digital consultation process. If you speak to most NHS healthcare providers, they'll tell you basic IT issues present huge obstacles in our work. Delays in electronic letters sent from hospitals to GPs are common, and some trusts still use paper mail. Perhaps greater investment in addressing fundamental IT issues would generate better results? There's also the issue of striking resident doctors and high burnout rates among obstetrics and gynecology residents who provide a significant chunk of service provision. In 2025, the UK medical workforce became majority female for the first time ever. Yet, working conditions and training opportunities have worsened. There appears to be a weaker financial commitment to the renewed women's health strategy compared with the first men's health strategy, too. Sisters, a reproductive health charity, has highlighted that the government promised 42 million euro for a trial on prostate cancer, yet the women's health strategy lacks any such funding commitment to research. That doesn't mean there aren't cash injections, such as the 1 million euro to support menstrual health education. Patients will also be given the power to reward good providers and reprimand poor providers through patient power payments, although further details on this are sadly still missing. Ultimately, the renewed strategy offers just some glimmers of hope, but only time will tell if the catchy soundbites and glossy social media campaigns convert into offline action and improved patient experiences. Regardless, there are people who will work tirelessly through all the changes to ensure that patients' needs are met. Dr. Annabelle Sovenimo is the author of Divided: Racism, Medicine, and Why We Need to Decolonize Healthcare, from the Wellcome Collection, 1099 euros. You've been listening to an article from Women's Health. I'm cautiously optimistic about the government's women's health strategy. News you can use. Want the latest health intel? We've read the research, so you don't have to. From Women's Health Magazine. Brain Train. Exercise may keep your brain active. A one-year study showed participants between 26 and 58 who did 150 minutes of moderate to vigorous activity a week, two 60-minute supervised sessions, plus exercises at home, had brains that looked 1 year younger than those of the control group, reducing the risk of later life cognitive decline. Try cycling, rowing, climbing stairs, and jogging at a pace where you can still have a chat. 30. Replacing this many minutes of Netflix with movement decreased the likelihood of depression by 18% in midlife adults, found a 65-454 strong study over 4 years. Physical activity at work reduced the risk by 10%, and even sleep lowered it by 9%. The more screen time replaced, the greater the reduction, with a 2-hour break equaling a 43% drop. Norse code. You've probably heard of DASH, but what about the Nordic diet? Data from 76,000 Swedish adults found that this style of eating fed a 23% lower mortality risk, including from cancer and cardiovascular disease. Eat less meat and sugar, and more legumes, fish, and low-fat dairy. Results stayed the same, even when taking into account income and physical activity. Heavy shifting. For fat loss, lift heavy, so says one new study. After 5 months, participants who strength trained 2 to 3 times per week saw the greatest reduction in body fat compared with those doing 200 minutes of cardio. Lifting builds muscle, increasing resting calorie burn, while requiring your body to use energy to repair muscle, restore glycogen, and rebalance hormones. GP, not GPT. If AI is the first to hear about your struggles, it might be time to log off. An analysis of 181 medical notes over 3 years revealed 38 instances where AI chatbots were linked to potentially harmful mental health consequences, including self-harm ideation and eating disorders. They can be helpful for symptom spotting, but if you need support, speak to a professional. Cognitive demand. Vitamin D may lower the risk of dementia. According to research, having more in your blood in your 30s and 40s was associated with lower levels of tau protein linked to Alzheimer's disease when brains were scanned 16 years later. While the study suggests a link rather than direct cause, authors highlight that midlife habits strongly impact long-term health. Aim for 10 mcg a day. Forget-me-not. Reassuringly, new research suggests menopausal brain fog has no lasting effect on cognitive health. When 14,234 pre, peri, and post-menopausal women completed online reasoning tests, there was little performance difference between them, and reported symptoms such as struggle focusing were only weakly linked to ability. Still, if you're feeling foggy, post-its and calendar reminders are useful nudges. Learning new skills keeps you sharp, and breaking down tasks can mitigate the overwhelm. The to-do list. Read. Smartphone Nation. Digital literacy expert Dr. Caitlin Regeer offers invaluable advice on building a safer and less all-consuming relationship with your smartphone. Out 2nd of July, Pan Macmillan, 10.99 euros. Participate. Turf Games London Summer. Enter the UK's biggest functional fitness competition in teams of 5 or 6, completing 4 workouts throughout the day. June 27th to 8th, turfgames.com. Support. World Breastfeeding Week. This year's theme is Strengthen What Works, about breastfeeding's impact on nutrition, food security, and poverty reduction. August 1st through 7th, worldbreastfeedingweek.org. This has been News You Can Use from Women's Health Magazine. You are listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona with your volunteer broadcaster, Kelly Pyle, and this is the Women's Hour. Can you turn back the clock? A youth spent sipping sugar-laden spirits, more hungover pilgrimages to the Golden Arches than you care to count, or a cheeky cig on a rare night out. Whether your poison is in your past or present, we suspect you have one. You're only human after all. But while the best time to overhaul your health is now, can you undo the damage you've already done? Article by L. Hunt and Lauren Clark. This is from Women's Health Magazine. It was the speed of it all that shook Linda Watkins. The 48-year-old from Sussex was out walking her dogs with her mom one morning 2 years ago. A week later, her mom had a stroke. The double blood clot on her brain, rendering her disabled on the left-hand side of her body. She went straight from hospital to an assisted living facility. She was only 68. My mom never said no, did everything for everyone, and had been spreading herself thin for years, says Linda, who works in PR. Daily duties had included being the primary carer to Linda's stepdad, who has Parkinson's disease. And she was the first to admit that chief among her coping tools was pouring herself a large drink. Consuming excessive amounts of alcohol is known to trigger atrial fibrillation, a type of irregular heartbeat that Linda's mom was subsequently diagnosed with. It's also linked with a raised risk of stroke. It was a huge wake-up call, Linda reflects. I wanted to be active and around for my two daughters, who are 10 and 12 years old. Seeing what happened to my mom made me realize I could end up going the same way if I didn't do something about it. Alongside a hardwired habit of reaching for a glass of wine when stressed, was a pattern of people-pleasing that would see her work through her lunch hour instead of going for a run. Change didn't come easily. It would be another 12 months before she found the courage to look at her habits head-on. But 2 years on from that wake-up call, life looks a lot different. Working with a functional nutritional therapist has empowered her to cook healthy meals from scratch. Her alcohol intake is a fraction of what it was, and weekends invariably feature gym sessions, bike rides, and yoga. Now, instead of fearing her next decade, she's embracing it. I've got so much more that I want to do. Linda's midlife health over is a relatable one. Like the proverb about planting a tree, if the best time to overhaul your health was 20 years ago, the second best time is now. And just as you didn't spend Friday nights in your 20s sowing the seeds of a sycamore, we suspect you weren't tucked up in bed by 10 p.m. either. The exact circumstances that led you to take a long, hard look at your health habits will be yours and yours alone. For some, like Linda, it's witnessing the deteriorating health of a loved one. For others, the body begins to object to the things you're inflicting on it, first quietly, then loudly. But a question lingers on the lips of anyone who's ever counted their reps, tracked their daily 2 liters, or weighed their protein. Beyond building muscle and smashing your park run PB, is it possible to undo the damage of a life not so well lived? Inherited wealth. The annoying answer? It depends. Lorna Harries is a professor of molecular genetics at the University of Exeter. She tells Women's Health that the body's ability to reverse damage is determined by both the impact and extent of the unhealthy habits, along with the age at which you overhaul them. But your genetic makeup plays a role too. Roughly a third of how an individual experiences aging is genetically determined, says Professor Harries, and you don't get any choice in your parents. Another big factor in determining health outcomes is just as close to home, that residents of affluent areas can expect to live about 13 years longer than those in deprived ones, illustrates just how intrinsic environment is to informing both how long you live, which is your lifespan, and how you'll live in those years, your health span, says Professor Harries. Consider, too, that location is tied to socioeconomic status, itself a determining factor in your ability to eat well, exercise, and make other solid choices for your health. And you begin to realize why the poorest in society have the odds stacked against them from birth. But if some of your health outcomes are out of your hands, others are well within your grasp. Take that cigarette perched between your fingers on the odd night out. While smoking triples the likelihood of dying from cancer compared with never smoking, quitting, even at an older age, greatly reverses the risk. A 2021 study found that smokers who quit between the ages of 35 and 44 dodged about 90% of the extra risk of dying from cancer they would have shouldered had they continued to smoke, a statistic that puts them nearly on par with peers who've never taken a puff. Even smokers who only quit after a cancer diagnosis have been shown to respond better to treatment and even lower their fatality risk from some cancers by 40%. Non-smokers, too, have some bounce back. Professor Harries points to the liver as the body's filtration system, processing not just nutrients, but alcohol, medicine, and other toxins. It routinely takes a battering. If you're not kind to it, you might get into a state in your 50s and 60s where it starts to complain, she says. But if you take that seriously and amend your diet and the amount of alcohol you drink, all the things we know we should be doing, your liver can actually regenerate. Indeed, improved functioning can be seen in as little as 3 to 4 weeks. In this sense, the liver is unusual. Not all our organs have this capacity for regeneration. And yet, most organs have stem cells that are capable of repairing a significant amount of damage, adds Professor Harries, with the caveat that the cells themselves need to be functioning optimally in order to do this. She gives the example of those diagnosed with type 2 diabetes in their 60s and 70s. Despite receiving the diagnosis later in life, by making some changes to their lifestyle, they may be able to significantly improve their blood sugar control. Hit job. If all of this sounds like a green light to do what you want, and call it a problem for future you, hold that thought. The age at which you overhaul your health matters. Because of the amount of time you're doing the thing, but also because your body's ability to recover isn't something you can bank on. The key thing is how bad the things were before you made the change, adds Professor Harries. And that baseline is more than just the sum of your good habits minus your bad ones. As for the question of how well you can expect to age, it's more complex than a dusty bottle of Barolo, with the how and why of disease development still largely an unknown quantity. While we know that obesity, for example, is linked with an increased risk of breast, endometrial, colon, and 10 other types of cancers, scientists still don't understand the mechanisms at play, limiting the process of prevention until now. A team of researchers recently began studying how obesity can cause cancer and whether losing weight removes the raised risk. The question is, does the body remember it's been obese? Says Nils Hallberg of the QIMR Berghofer Medical Research Institute. His research builds on the so-called multiple hit hypothesis. This posits that cancer-causing gene mutations present from birth or acquired, such as from disease, only progress to tumors in response to subsequent hits to the system, causing further mutation. This could explain why cancer rates are rising, with modern environments and lifestyles exposing us to more hits than in the past, says Dr. Hallberg. What we have shown is that obesity itself can act as a hit. If you have just one mutation, that doesn't cause cancer, but if you add obesity on top, it's enough. The question of whether the elevated cancer risk from obesity can be reversed is particularly pertinent in the age of GLP-1s, notes Dr. Hallberg, and could even lead to the development of other drugs capable of erasing epigenetic memory, or how the body processes and remembers changes to its cells over time. With findings not expected until mid-2028, for now, the research highlights the ambiguousness of good health and bad. Sometimes people talk about it as an on and off switch, which I think is wrong, adds Dr. Hallberg. Such binary thinking underplays the complex interplay going on within the body. It also underplays the hormonal havoc wrought by a woman's reproductive life cycle, which explains female vulnerabilities to certain conditions. Take osteoporosis, a progressive disease characterized by low bone mass, leaving bones more vulnerable to fractures and breaks, which women over 50 are more at risk of. It's all to do with estrogen, which plays a huge role in keeping bones strong and healthy throughout a woman's fertile life, and also lifestyle habits, says Nikki Ramskill, GP, and founder of the Female Health Doctor. Think, a lack of weight-bearing exercise, nutrient deficiencies, or long-term medication, such as steroids. In an ideal world, says Dr. Ramskill, you'd be laying the groundwork well before midlife hormonal changes. What we're trying to do is create a bank of really strong bones when we're young, so that when we're older and go through menopause, bones can remain as strong as possible and hopefully avoid osteoporosis down the line. Gear change. But if the body has an ability to weather stormy conditions, both hormonal and lifestyle, there comes a point when doing so becomes more difficult, if not impossible. A study last year found that rather than aging by increments, we experience changes in two dramatic bursts around the ages of 44 and 60. This aligns with Professor Harry's findings on the genetics of aging. You tick along quite nicely until you're about 50, but after that, chronic diseases become more and more common, she says. Indeed, their common roots mean that, after your first diagnosis, a second can be quick to follow. A better goal than seeking to reverse change is taking steps to delay that inflection point for as long as possible. It's this goal that researchers are articulating when they talk about health span. The proportion of your total life that you spend in reasonably good health. In the not too distant future, health span could be extendable with drugs. As the founder and chief scientific officer of Seneca, a spin-off company from the University of Exeter, Professor Harries is at the cutting edge of developing biotechnology to tackle cellular aging, one of the common causes of chronic disease. Time, stress, and DNA damage combine to cause more cells to become senescent, and with it, less effective, even damaging. The drugs Professor Harries is working on are showing strong potential to not just be able to slow, but reverse those features of cell aging. What we have shown is that you can take these really old, creaky cells and reprogram them into younger cells and actually restore functionality. In the future, Professor Harry suggests such drugs could revolutionize aging in much the same way that GLP-1s have transformed weight loss. For now, Seneca is focusing its efforts on treating certain diseases, specifically idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis. But some of the health-extending benefits of Professor Harry's miracle drugs are already available through following a bog-standard healthy diet. The drugs' rejuvenating effects mirror those of compounds present in dark chocolate, blueberries, and strawberries, as well as other natural foods. If you're eating a Mediterranean diet and lots of brightly colored fruit and veggies, you're going to be maintaining this pathway that we work on anyway, says Professor Harries. All of which underscores the importance of taking small steps to protect your health as early in life as possible. Aging is inevitable. Aging badly is not, adds Professor Harries, who singles out preserving muscle mass and protecting the immune system as two high-priority interventions. The usual advice applies. Quit smoking if you smoke, curb alcohol if you drink, and consume a healthy diet that includes plenty of protein as well as the minerals calcium and magnesium, adds Dr. Ramskill. Don't forget the importance of habitual exercise, too. Make sure there's a load going through the body that will put stress on the bones, insists Dr. Ramskill. Think lifting weights, dancing and walking, rather than cycling or swimming. Systemic change. In the end, the goal isn't to unharm your health, but to delay the point at which time starts working against you. Though all the experts we spoke to when researching this piece were unequivocal about the link between age and disease, they were also crystal clear that it's very much within our power to extend our healthy years, no matter how laissez-faire you were in the past. That could mean undertaking a clinical intervention, such as taking statins, meds to lower cholesterol, or it could just mean introducing sustainable lifestyle changes. But the important message to get across here is it's never too late to change, adds Professor Harries. She cites examples of those she sees on cancer wards, sneaking out for a cigarette. People might think, oh, well, I've already done the damage. There's no point. But even a small change will have a benefit to your whole system. Now that she's overhauled her own health, Linda is intent on passing her health habits on to her daughters to give them the head start she didn't have. She's also convinced her new approach to nutrition and fitness is helping the menopause symptoms, including brain fog and hot flushes, that she's simultaneously been grappling with. I really lost my mojo for a while, she shares. But now I've got so much energy, I feel like I'm in my 20s. To-do list. 5 things you can do for your health starting now. Start lifting. Women naturally begin to lose muscle mass and strength as they get older, particularly accelerating around menopause, says Oliver Raby, a London-based NHS and private GP. Strength training helps preserve muscle, improves metabolic health, and maintains physical function, as well as being especially valuable for bone health and warding off osteoporosis. Try to do at least 2 sessions, lifting weights, using resistance bands, or enlisting body weight per week. Increase calcium. Foods rich in the mineral include full-fat Greek yogurt, cottage cheese, and oily fish such as sardines, mackerel, and salmon, explains Robin Cohen, a GP at HCA Healthcare UK, of the nutrient that's vital for everything from bones and muscles to the heart and nerves. He recommends seeking a blood test to check that you don't have any specific deficiencies that need addressing too. Prioritize sleep. It plays a huge role in physical and mental health, affecting mood, concentration, appetite, and energy levels. But it's often one of the first things to suffer when life becomes busy or stressful, notes Dr. Raby. For many women, sleep can also be affected by hormonal changes, particularly during midlife. His advice? Create a wind-down routine in the 30 to 60 minutes before you go to bed. That might include dimming lights, putting work away, listening to music, reading, stretching, or another relaxing activity. Eat more fiber. Fiber has powerful health benefits, including reducing the risk of bowel cancer, heart disease, and type 2 diabetes, shares Lucy Hooper, a private GP and co-founder of Coin Medical in London, of why you should aim for 30 grams a day. If your current intake is low, increase it gradually by 5 to 10 grams per day and drink plenty of water to minimize bloating. Seeds, beans, lentils, fruits, and nuts can be added to salads, yogurt, or alongside dishes such as salmon or chicken. Reduce substances, particularly smoking, vaping, and excess alcohol, advises Dr. Raby. Smoking remains one of the most damaging things for long-term health, while vaping is not risk-free, and people end up doing it more frequently. As for alcohol, drinking too much over time can affect multiple systems in the body, including the liver, brain and cardiovascular system and is linked to an increased risk of several cancers. Struggling to cut down? Ask your GP to advise on services such as the NHS Stop Smoking Service or Smart Recovery. You have been listening to Can You Turn Back the Clock? From Women's Health Magazine. We have reached the end of today's Women's Hour. Thanks for joining us. My name is Kelly Pyle, and I am your Sun Sounds of Arizona volunteer broadcaster. I hope you enjoyed the articles that I shared with you today, and you'll join us again next week for another interesting and entertaining collection of articles from women's magazines. And don't forget, you can take Sun Sounds with you. You can stream, as well as access shows on demand, on our new Sun Sounds of Arizona app for Apple and Android phones. Have a wonderful day and be sure to stay tuned to Sun Sounds of Arizona.